want to fight underage sex work, you need to, A, make it easier for minors to be emancipated, mm-hmm. so that they can get conventional jobs if that's what they
you
want.
You have to give them another option.
You do. You absolutely do. And the second thing is drop-in shelters. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the shelters now, cops hang around them.
Hello, my name is Megan Ingerman, and I'm hosting this month's episode of Prestasia Foundation's podcast vodcast series, Sex, Human Rights, and CSA Prevention. This month, we are very fortunate to have Maggie McNeil, the Honest Courtesan. Maggie is a sex worker, a prolific writer, a former librarian, and she sits on Prestasia's advisory council. So, hi Maggie.
Hello.
Thanks for chatting with us today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Very in-demand sex worker and prolific writer. Now you're starring in this documentary, The War on Whores. Do you ever get tired?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Do you take breaks? Do you have self-care rituals?
I do. I have my nightly self-care ritual, which is basically getting as stoned as possible. sleeping.
I mean, no comment.
Stoned as possible and sleeping.
Awesome. That's a great self-care ritual. I'm familiar with that one myself.
But you know, mostly, for me, it's little rules.
Okay.
For example, I don't make appointments before noon.
Okay.
And when I say appointments, I don't just mean sex work appointments. I mean any kind
just
of appointments.
Just anything. So that you
I don't
have
get my
to.
Nails done. I don't get my hair done. I don't make doctor's appointments. It doesn't matter. Unless there's some, even when I go to my beauty doctor, she only does afternoons one day a week, so my appointments are always on that day of the week.
Gotcha.
Because I'm not going in the morning, sorry. So it's little things like that.
Okay. But,
mostly I'm just, I do get tired, but I'm really pretty good at continuing until whatever it is done.
Okay.
And then dropping.
Okay.
So sometimes I might seem like I'm very high energy.
So sometimes you gotta power through, but
yes.
Then you make sure to make time for yourself to
yes.
just drop after.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm gonna pivot a little bit. As you and many of our viewers know, Prestasia is a child protection organization based on the idea that protecting children should not force consenting adults to give up civil liberties, and that there are allies in the fight against child sexual abuse who are often overlooked. For instance, sex workers. Can you tell me a bit about why sex workers are strong allies in this endeavor?
Well, I think the whole idea that sex workers would not be comes from the Madonna whore duality, mm-hmm. right? The idea that's very old, that all women can be divided into Madonnas and whores,
mm-hmm.
right? And that if you're a whore, you're not a Madonna.
Right.
And so that viewpoint, I think if people are laboring under that, it's going to make them feel as though sex workers would not be. But in truth, 70-something percent of sex workers worldwide have children and are no different from any other people. And I think it's natural for humans, even humans who don't have children themselves. You know, I don't have children myself.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, at the same time, you feel a sense of protectiveness toward children. You want to protect children. We're very aware that they're not able to navigate the world in
mm-hmm.
the way that we do. But at the same time, I think this idea has arisen, and it's come and gone several times through history. The most recent one started in the Victorian era.
Mm-hmm.
This idea of children as being uniquely incompetent. And what I mean by that is the idea that that children need to be protected from everything.
Mm-hmm.
Even things that most cultures didn't feel like they really needed to be protected from.
Right. Important experiences that just teach us how to be people.
Exactly. Exactly. Or things like, for example, I mean, for most of human history, people were raised on farms.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of that you need to protect children from not seeing dogs fucking or something.
Right. Because sex and life and death are all such an integral part of the farm, and so they used to get a more
of course.
Clear picture of
course.
What things are actually like.
And don't anymore. And so I think sex workers, I think, can in a way be, how do I say it? In a sense, the voice of reason. We can kind of be the ones who can say, you know, it's not as bad as you
right.
think.
Right. Whatever side of it you're falling on, it's not as extreme as that.
As that, yeah. right? Let's kind of back up. Let's take stock.
Right.
And also, we are the canaries in the civil liberties call line.
Definitely.
You know, we're always the one that get picked on.
Mm-hmm.
We're the ones that people will be... And in a sense, it's weird because if anything is an adult business, it's ours.
Absolutely.
And yet people are constantly, I mean, there's not a sex worker I know who would see a client who was underage.
Right.
Or things like that.
Yeah.
And yet there's these notions.
That you're somehow a predator
yes.
and then also a victim at
yes.
the same time.
At
and
the
that
same
must
time.
Be very frustrating.
And of course the idea too, there's the idea that our clients prefer very young. And of course
right.
this is all part of the whole... The whole thing of end demand
right.
is the idea that clients are innately predatory. Well, as I've gotten older as a sex worker,
mm-hmm.
the demand has only increased,
mm-hmm.
which of course would not be
Please
true.
Congratulations.
If, oh, thank you. which would not be true if all clients really were interested in very, very young.
Right, of course, because as we discover, as we move on, sex is a spectrum.
Yes.
And there, it's a huge spectrum,
very
too.
Huge, yes.
Everything
absolutely.
From fetishes. Anyway, you know that.
Yes.
but yes, so, okay. Thank you. Very good answer.
Thank you.
Does the criminalization of sex work help protect minors who are entering that profession before they are of legal age, or does it put them in danger?
It puts them in danger. It absolutely puts them in danger. Because, to use the example I was just
mm-hmm.
you know using, let's say you had a client. You know, ordinary guy.
Mm-hmm.
He goes to see a sex worker that
mm-hmm.
he has found online who claims that she is 19 or 20 or
mm-hmm.
21 or something. He gets there and it becomes very obvious to him very quickly that she's not.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because of the way she talks, the way she dresses, the way she, you know, the signals come out and he goes, yeah, honey, you're not really
mm-hmm.
18. What can he do under criminalization? Nothing. He can walk out the door.
Mm-hmm.
That's all he can do. The best he can do is walk out the door and not finish the session.
Right.
He can't report. Oh, what's he going to do?
Right.
Nowadays, with surveillance, there's not even such a thing. I mean, when I was younger, he could, maybe if he thought that was a good idea, go pick up a payphone. You can't even do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Nobody
right.
can be sure.
Right. There's
the
no
cops,
such thing as an anonymity anymore.
There's
because
no anonymity.
Everything can be
right.
traced. And...
Right. And then even if he did call the cops, let's say, what would they do? The majority of underage sex workers have been in and out of the foster care system.
How amazing would it be if, like, the stings that they set up were actually just counselors and, like, people to help them? Because so many underage sex workers have had some kind of trouble at home, and
of
that's
course.
Part of how they've ended up. Like,
that's why they're
if it was, like, more like an intervention with people who actually cared about them instead of jail time. And, like, if they didn't want to continue in that field, they could actually have real jobs.
Yeah.
Sorry, just a fantasy.
No, it would be great. And one of the things I've talked about, and I've gone on the record, is saying that if you want to fight so-called child sex trafficking,
mm-hmm.
which if you want to fight underage sex work, you need to, A, make it easier for minors to be emancipated
mm-hmm.
so that they can get conventional
yeah.
jobs if that's what they
you
want.
You have to give them another option.
You do. We absolutely do. And the second thing is drop-in shelters.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the shelters now, cops hang around them.
Mm-hmm.
What underage runaway is going to go to a shelter where they know cops are going to be hanging
Literally
out?
None.
None.
Especially if they've been doing sex work and they know that they can get
of course.
Picked up for that.
Of course. And... even the things under criminalization
mm-hmm.
that are sold as protecting underage sex workers are exactly the opposite. So in many, many states, there are these so-called safe harbor laws.
Mm-hmm.
And I have spoken against these over and over and over again because
mm-hmm.
the way they sell them is, oh, these underage prostitutes, because of course they never say sex workers.
Of course not.
Why
respect
are,
you as a human being or
exactly.
anything like that?
You know, they say, you know, they're victims.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not going to arrest them. And when they say this, of course, the reporters clap and the other politicians clap. And it
mm-hmm.
sounds so wonderful until you read the fine print.
Yeah.
The fine print is not arrest them means, yes, we're still arresting them, but we're not calling it arrest.
No, but they'll still have a record.
They'll
still
have
a record. To fight against for the rest of their lives.
And they say, oh, we're not going to put them in jail. No, but they can put them indefinitely in what they call protective custody.
So that's how they get around not having a reason to arrest them. Or not having a solid charge.
Correct.
Interesting.
And so there's no charge. That also means because they're not arrested, they can't, they don't have the right to call an attorney.
Oh.
So they can hold them indefinitely without charge under the claim that they're protecting them from pimps.
So, I mean, this is a huge part of your movie that you're promoting today. And this is
absolutely
a large part of why Prestasia exists in general. These laws that curb the civil liberties of consenting adults, but actually actively harm, or at best don't hurt minors.
Yes,
And it's just amazing.
And when you say at best, it is at best.
That's
because
just
the
it,
majority
like,
of the time they do hurt minors.
Yeah,
very
at
much.
Best they're not causing as much harm as they could be, because there's no way you come through a situation like that without some trauma.
No, absolutely. And another example is when you read about these great big stings, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say, oh, we rescued X number of children.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of times those children, well, some if they're sex workers themselves, they're not children. They're in their late teens.
Right.
So they're young adults.
Yeah.
But a lot of the times when you see in the police reports all these young ages, oh, we saved some who were under 10 and under 5 and all this. It's actually the sex worker's kids.
I was going to say, it sounds like what you did a sting on was like a sex worker daycare.
That's right. What will happen is, like, in other words, they'll do something like the sex worker will be doing a session, or she thinks she's doing a session,
uh-huh.
and it's really cops.
Right.
And her partner is waiting outside
right.
with the kids, uh-huh. or it's an in-call, and maybe her neighbor takes care of her kids
uh-huh.
while that you know she's in session.
Right.
But the cops will then abduct her kids.
Thank goodness they've saved those children from a mother who is actively taking care of them.
Yes, and they put them in foster care, where there's
a much higher
chance they'll become sex workers themselves.
Which, while definitely children need to be removed from homes that are abusive, foster care is such a failure.
Oh, it's such
a
failure.
As, like, a social program.
Oh, yes.
Such a failure.
Oh, yes.
Nobody is better off for having been in foster care.
It's a shit show.
Yeah.
I mean,
and
yeah.
in many cases, it lands children in situations that are just as abusive as the ones they were taken out of. Or puts them right back into the one that they were taken out of.
Yes.
Because mom and dad, or mom or dad, have done just enough to make CPS happy.
Absolutely.
These are things I can rant about for a long time. I won't. I'm going to pivot to, because we did mention consent a little bit, so we're going to pivot to that. Consent is a huge part of what you do, obtaining it, understanding it, honoring it. Do you think there's an effective way to teach consent at a younger age?
Ooh, that's a good question. There's a lot has been made of these concepts, like, I'll give you a story from my own life.
Mm-hmm.
My first husband, when we were talking about the potential possibility of children, one of the things we talked about that he could not get his brain around
mm-hmm.
was the idea that when, if you want to talk to a child, if you want to go into the child's room,
mm-hmm.
that you knock and you wait to be told to enter.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, but it's my house. I'm going, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter. It's their room.
Bodily autonomy.
Exactly.
Autonomy in general.
And you have to teach, when you teach children things like, in this space, this is your space.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if, you know, like if mommy and daddy think that something bad is happening to you, we may come in, you know,
right.
if we hear you scream or something.
Yes.
But under ordinary conditions,
this is your space.
This is your space. We're going to knock on that door, and we're going to wait for you to say, yes, come in. And people have talked about it. And at first, I was a little skeptical, but I've become less skeptical thinking about it. The idea of not forcing children to hug grandma.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually a very strong proponent of that one.
Well, when I first heard it, it kind of bounced off my head. And I kind of went, And then the more I thought about it, the more I was like, no.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense.
Because you think about how you would feel about it if someone's like, go hug that person you don't feel like hugging right now.
Yes.
And now, like, so as an extreme introvert, that one, as soon as I heard it, I was like, why are we making kids do that? Because look at how uncomfortable they sometimes get, so much so that they're crying and clinging
yes.
to mom and dad. And, like, why would it seem like a good idea to make a child do something like that unless it was genuinely for their own good? They're going to cry when they need to get a shot.
Of course.
That's different.
That's different. But you see, I think for me, one of the reasons I didn't notice it as much at first mm-hmm. is because I am a very physical person, a mm-hmm. very physically demonstrative person. Mm-hmm. And even when I was little, I think I grokked very early that there are certain things you have to perform. Mm-hmm. And so even if, I think I understood even like at 4 and 5, mm-hmm. that, oh yes, even if you don't necessarily like this particular relative, it's part of this little dance we do. Mm-hmm. And so I was giving consent, but I was an unusual child.
Right. The nice people watching the podcast were not in the car with us earlier, but we were discussing how there's kind of a foot for every shoe,
sure.
or shoe fetishist. That all of these things are kind of a spectrum.
Yes,
so, like,
absolutely.
The way you interact with people is different from the way I think that's for me where it becomes so important, because there are the kids who are going to want to run up and hug and whatever suggestion
and are waiting for
the okay too. And then there are the kids like me who like really just would rather not interact. Like, no, thank
yes.
you. I'm good. And I think that's where it becomes important, so that everybody, I think, has that space.
Oh, absolutely. And my friend Julian Keenan, who wrote Sex with Shakespeare, mm-hmm. and your viewers can definitely look that up. It's a really good book. It's
on her my list now.
It's her journey of coming out as a Spanko.
Oh, okay.
But one of the things that she has convinced me of, I was never particularly a person who thought there was anything wrong with moderate spanking of children.
Mm.
She convinced me otherwise. She mm-hmm. convinced me that that was not so. And her reasoning was, most kids are probably just going to throw that off and not feel it as a violation.
Mm-hmm.
But if the kid is a spankophile, because I mean, we know that these kind of fetishes and sometimes come into form very early in
mm-hmm.
life. And she said she perceived spankings as a sexual humiliation.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't know what sex was.
Right.
But she knew that it was uniquely embarrassing and it felt like a violation
mm-hmm.
to her. And her point is that even if there's a chance that that might be so with a kid,
mm-hmm.
do we really want to risk it?
Yeah.
Do you want to risk them feeling violated by something that you're not intending as a violation?
Mm-hmm. Like, is it so worth it to you to do this
yes.
thing that we've traditionally done? Like,
yes.
I mean, that argument comes up in a lot of things that are changing right now. Okay, but traditionally we didn't do it that way. It's like, okay, but we don't do a lot of things now that we traditionally did before.
Right,
So.
Well, we talked about payphones a little while ago, right? I mean,
yeah.
traditionally I didn't carry a phone in my freaking
right.
purse.
Right, but now it's practically surgically attached to me.
Yes.
So,
yes.
as a matter of fact, it's right here.
Things change. yeah, things do change.
So, I have several friends and acquaintances who are both in sex work and some form of childcare or a sex ed position, myself included. I regularly hear stories about sex workers being rejected as sex ed teachers on the grounds of their being sex workers, basically. How does that make you feel? Do you agree with such sentiments, or do you think sex workers are appropriate sex ed instructors?
Well, I think you already know what I'm going to say.
I do.
But tell
the nice people.
It's the Madonna whore thing again, right?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it? It's the Madonna whore thing. It's the idea that, and people who read my blog regularly know that I enjoy hyperbole. And so one of the things I talk about is I satirize these attitudes as
mm-hmm.
being, do they think that we're putting out sex rays that will harm people and that you have to have lead shielding to protect the children from the sex
right,
rays?
Right, like I'm actually just going to throw some porn up on the projector and let them take notes?
Exactly. But I think it's even more esoteric than that. I don't think that they think any specific thing. I don't think that they think that these people are going to do anything, especially if it's a teacher that they've just discovered.
Mm-hmm.
There was one a few years ago where a French teacher who had been teaching for decades was discovered to have done a French language porn in the early 70s.
That's
this is
so
a woman
cool.
who's like in her 60s now, you know.
That's such a cool thing to have on your resume.
Right? And they fired her. But she's had this track record as a French teacher for decades and never done anything inappropriate. But somehow they think, I think a lot of it, honestly, is about their demonstration. It's not so much that they're really worried that she's going to do anything that
mm-hmm.
should be a bad influence. It's that they, as an administrator, as a school board member, as
mm-hmm.
a principal, have to be seen there's by the Prudes.
Moral high ground that they have to take.
To demonstrate. They have to enact this thing. It's
which
theater.
Which is, I mean, crazy, and we see this a lot in, like, the criminal justice system in this country, at least, anyway, where, like, there's no redemption.
Yes.
There's no redemption for anything you've done. None. So even if you've done your time and you get out, it's hard to get jobs.
Yes.
You, we have an acquaintance who had...
Excuse me. I guess we can cut that.
We had an acquaintance on Twitter recently because of a past wrongdoing of his. His wife lost her job.
Yeah, he's on the board, isn't he?
Yes, he is. Thankfully, it all came out good. But, I mean, that's a lot to go through. Even though it came out with a happy ending, that's a week of trauma for both of them. This happened. It can never unhappen. And I know he's getting some pretty nasty messages. And, like, so that, like, there's no redemption for anything.
None at all. And I've talked about this in I wrote a column once called Permanent Record.
Mm-hmm.
And I riffed on the whole thing of when I was a child, I don't know if they still do it, but when I was a child, they would tell you, this will go on your permanent record.
Yeah.
And it was this idea, this kind of of fantasy among children that there was somewhere this big file.
Some magical permanent record that follows you through. I remember that. Like, right? It follows you through your life, and it starts in elementary school somehow magically, and they know about it in college and your job someday.
Right.
It's like the boogeyman of responsibility.
It is. And that was never true back then. It's becoming true now.
It is.
Right? That there really is a permanent record, that there really is something that
really
follows
these kids.
That's
a really interesting point. Yeah, your social media to some degree. And even not then, like, I mean, how many celebrities have we seen get their personal information hacked and then they've been slammed for, like, the fact that they did these things in private?
Yes.
As consenting adults.
Oh, yes. There was a filmmaker, a young filmmaker. And he was accused... 10 years ago of some kind of sexual impropriety, like sexual assault or something, in college, he was exonerated.
Mm-hmm. But the fact that he was ever accused followed him for the rest of his life.
Yes, and they wanted to basically destroy his career because someone accused him of something. Didn't even prove it, just accused.
Yeah. I see, and it's a tough one to talk about, too, because you immediately get called, like, a rape apologist or an apologist of some kind.
Yes.
The minute you try to say, like... But I don't think he actually did it, because none of the evidence supports that.
Right.
That's why we have trials.
Right. Oh, there's also, too, a thing to me. There's a big distinction. And this is something that, you know, we in the sex worker community, there's a lot of people that I have put out word on people, on clients who were... you know, kind of shady, kind of
right. Made. Something didn't feel quite right.
Didn't feel quite right. But these documents are only exchanged among sex workers.
Mm-hmm.
Almost nobody would want to see that guy put in jail for this thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're just warning other sex workers kind of in this whisper network. We're
quietly
keep yourself saying,
safe.
Keep yourself safe. That doesn't mean we want the state with its gigantic hammer coming down on that person.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's where, like, there's a place in which something resembling a registry, and I know registry is a dirty word, but where something resembling a registry is something that people can use to keep themselves safe between themselves, and then there's a point where the government takes it over and it's just a weapon.
Yes. So, yes, exactly. Because, I mean, there's you know, these sites that sex workers use.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, there's plenty of guys on there, including some of them that are pretty bad, you know? And yet, at the same time, would we really want those people thrown in jail? I'm a prison abolitionist.
Yeah.
I don't want them thrown in jail.
Most of the sex workers I know, whether they've had a run-in with the law at this point or not, definitely are not looking to get anybody arrested. They just want their friends to know, and not even their friends, just other people working. Like, just so you
other
know,
sex workers.
I had this experience. I want you guys to know that, and I've definitely benefited from that kind of sharing. And I mean, I feel like in sex work, the first thing you have to learn is that discretion is the better part of valor.
Yes.
And with that, like, I don't understand why people don't trust sex workers. You handle so many sensitive things all the time. anyway.
No, but I think that's part of it. You know, honestly, and this is a little controversial to say, but I kind of think that a lot of the reason, I know that's not everybody that opposes it, I think a lot of the reasons that some people oppose sex workers is a kind of a jealousy. That we really are better than a lot of people in the general population at dealing with a lot of issues, and some people resent that.
I definitely run into that just on the poly and kink side of things for me, especially poly. I would never say that poly is better than monogamy. I definitely believe that you should have the relationship that works for you, but I will say, based on my own experiences, having been monogamous at one point in my life and poly for a good portion of it, and then just knowing other poly people, like, there's definitely, we deal with more talking.
Yes.
A lot of monogamous people manage to sweep things under the rug and just never talk about
it.
But it really comes to the surface with things like, poly. You have to keep talking. And it's, I think, the same kind of idea.
Very much so. Like, I mean, if I'm going to have a guy come into my home, because I live in my in-car.
Right.
So he can come in my home. We're going to be in private. I'm going to be doing things with him that generally amateurs only do with people they're kind of intimate with.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know some things about him, and I want to establish these clear bounds of
consent.
Of what consent and what's going to go, what's going to happen, what's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I've had to have things where... I've actually had clients propose and such, and where I had to kind of gently go, okay,
very flattered.
Let's reset this you know, boundary here. Let's kind of look at, you know, this is what's acceptable. These are within the bounds, and this is what's not. And I'm not angry at you for asking that. I'm flattered. I'm, you know, but at the same time, this is not going to happen. And I'm not rejecting you because I don't like you. I'm rejecting because that's not what we're about.
Right. So I think I'm getting the Oscar finish your speech playoff music here. So I'm going to thank you very much for talking to us today and mention once again that you are starring in The War on Whores, which Stasia, I guess by the time this is seen, will have screened.
We'll have screened.
At the New Parkway Theater. Very excited about that for tonight. And thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for joining us for this month's episode. Please join us again next month when we will be speaking to another expert about sex, human rights, and CSA prevention. To make sure you don't miss it, subscribe to our podcast, or if you're watching on YouTube, click here to subscribe to our channel. We also love donations towards our work. See you next time.